on both of my eyebrows, I have one single hair that's like three times, it grows three times as long as all the rest of the hairs. On one on each, I just have to pluck
like
them.
Like little antennae.
Yeah, it's, what? Why did these two follicles get this message to not stop growing? What is happening? We had a lot of parent interaction this week.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we did.
Three funny stories with that, I think.
Well, yeah,
not so much a funny story with my mom. It's just a nice story. She came over to visit for a day, and she's getting a new assisted living situation really close to me, and just had to come for some meetings. And I was like, why don't you just stay so you don't have to drive back to Tillamook? And and then we gotta spend the whole day together just chatting and stuff. We talked about religion. We talked about a bunch of stuff. It was actually really interesting hearing more directly from her about religion and her upbringing with Catholicism and stuff, because I was always really confused by it as a kid. I thought that she was a believer but didn't practice, and that seemed like hypocrisy. And just to my childhood brain, that's how it kind of appeared. And for her, like, she grew up in the Catholic Church before a 60s Reformation, and the church became something that wasn't her church anymore. And so she still believed in that old structure, and it felt like blasphemy to her to go to this new structure with guitars, and there wasn't all the same rituals and stuff. It was just like, what is this? This isn't my church.
Sermons are no longer in Latin.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, she learned Latin in grade school for church. And mm-hmm. So knowing more of that context now, it makes sense that she only went on Easter and Christmas. And I thought it was just like, she was just phoning it in when, you know, she was just like, well, I still want to do some of it, you know? And so that was really interesting. And she also had a lot of baggage around going to another church and going, you know, sitting in another church because it felt wrong for her for the same reasons. And so it's only been recently that she has kind of grown into allowing that, like, I'm praying to my own God, whatever, and like I can just be around these other people, it's all good. And which is cool, because I invited her to come to Easter at our church, and so we're gonna have a nice time with that and then go to brunch afterwards and stuff.
I had a dream involving you last night. I have a recurring dream that does not necessarily always involve you, but I have a recurring genre of dream, mm-hmm. which is very much, I think, I don't go in for subtext all that much, but like, you don't have to dig very deep in this one to get the subtext. In this version, in this iteration, I was trying to find a quiet space for us to record.
Great.
I was in a hotel, and I was trying to find my floor and then my room. And then it turned out that I didn't really have a room. I had like a space, almost like a cube space in a huge open plan, noisy, like massive hostel type thing.
Oh, no.
And it was just bunks and bunks and bunks. And that's sort of where I left it. But I have this genre of dream, which is like, I'm trying to do a specific thing, and then one thing on top of the other gets in the way, and I can never actually get to do the thing. And it's always so close. It's always within grasp. It's always only just this one other thing, and then I can get to the thing that I need to do.
Yeah.
Can't imagine of what that might be indicative of. of what that might indicate, but you were sort of the subject of it yesterday.
Was I the thing in the way?
No, the thing in the way was you were the object in this particular instance.
Of course, because recording for
the thing in the way this time was, and it's always the same kind of thing. It's just like in this case it was just couldn't get to this mythical quiet place that I thought I was going to be able to find. It's like, let me just find a quick place to record. And then it's, you know, problem stuck on top of problem.
So correct me if I'm wrong.
Are we finished already?
Is the thing, that's an analogy for, is the thing that's in the way the analogy is about, is that yourself or what?
No, I think it's more that there is always, I always feel like there is an objective that I'm going to, and I'm always just, it's always just around the corner. It just needs this thing. Yeah. It just needs this one unlock. That is,
yeah, that is definitely a theme.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that's what it is. The target moves. Happiness is a moving target title.
I like that.
Oh, listen, if you're unaware, the reason I say title in the same breath comes from podcaster Merlin Mann, who would do the same thing. Ooh, there goes a train. Podcaster Merlin Mann would do the same thing where he would have a phrase and then he'd knew that it would make a good episode title. So he'd just say the word title.
Title.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you went and did something rather grown up and businessy the Friday when we last recorded. I'd love you to tell us about it.
Yeah, I went to a trade show for, it was like the Home and Outdoor Living Show here in Portland. And it was probably about 50 or 60 or so vendors for a variety of inside and outside the home kind of either contractors or products, either products for contractors to use or products for home use. There's like, I actually bought like this little mop thing that was pretty cool. It's like a, you know, like a lint roller has like the tearaway sheets that are sticky. It's a roller, but it's like a combination of silicone and rubber. And so the roller itself is sticky and doesn't get unsticky. And so you roller yourself and then you just wash it off with water and it just, all the dirt and dust and hair and stuff just comes off and then it becomes sticky again. And so you can just roll yourself again and again and again and never have to tear away a bunch of paper and have to replace the roller all the time. So
incredible.
I thought so too. And I got like this mop. The woman gave the most amazing presentation of like just the infomercial, like classic. Oh, and yeah. If you buy now and wait, there's more. And like, it was just glorious. And she was just hamming it up. She loved it. Anyways, the package that I got had like a floor roller which is great for our new rug that the cats love to lay on and leave all of their fur on. Mm-hmm. But that's not the point of the story. we've been having our talks about how I need to, or not need to, I am trying to grow Rockstar, stabilize my businesses and work towards stability. Mm-hmm. And one of the suggestions I think you had made at one point was to try and go to trade shows or try to like maybe get a booth at a trade show. That's maybe something different than what I just went to. like a wedding trade show was your example, and you know, be the one outlier that people could come up to and talk to. And I was like, oh, that sounds great. Looked up trade shows coming up. There wasn't really anything that would work for, but there was a home and garden trade show. And I was like, well, still not a bad idea. People are going there with the intention of this and I can at least just walk the trade show floor. And I got in my head like, okay, there's going to be a bunch of people here that are thinking that are probably homeowners and they're probably thinking about remodels. So maybe I could talk to people that were like, we're all sitting off getting a bite to eat before we go back and look at more stuff. Because I've been to a bunch of different types of trade shows, and I've been to some that are like all day events and they have like classes and they have like an eating area and they have like different things happening at different times and stuff. And I was like in my head thinking kind of like in that scenario where I might strike up a conversation with fellow patrons, fellow people just on the show floor looking at stuff. And so I made my business cards, and I knew this was coming for a couple of weeks. And so I had my calendar, and I was thinking about it, and I was like amping myself up because I'm not an extrovert. I'm very much an introvert, and I'm not a salesperson. I like what I'm doing to sell itself. I believe in my product, and so I'm going to talk about it a lot and with passion. And it's that in that scenario, it comes through that I believe in my product, and it's a good thing, and great, and it sells really well. When I go on an estimate for Rockstar, when I'm doing a walkthrough with somebody, I naturally sell the thing because I believe in it so much. But when they're coming to me, they've asked me for the walkthrough, they've, you know, invited me in, and then I'm like happy to go on forever. Like you asked this question, I'm happy to just barrel through and tell the whole big story. That's maybe not super relevant, but sometimes it is. And
it's all relevant.
So I was trying to build myself up and be like, yeah, I can go talk to people and just be like, oh, I mean, I am actually a remodeler. Here's my card. And if you need something, call me. And then I get there and I make two mistakes. One mistake was that what I just described, thinking that this was going to be a situation where there was going to be some sort of downtime where I was going to be able to mingle with other people that were coming, and that I could talk to other people just walking the show floor and looking around at booths, because there wasn't. And there is no scenario in my mind where I could justify the idea of somebody also just walking the show floor and going up to people and talking about my own business, where they're coming here to see the people that paid for booths. And I just couldn't get past that. I couldn't talk to anybody. And I was still so focused on the people walking the floor and not necessarily the booths, because the booths were all competitors and things that were irrelevant to me, like pavers and roofers and then products. And there was a coffee booth, there was dog treats, there was spices, and like those were irrelevant to me. Being, you know, the remodeler at a wedding show, you know, like trying to stand out
and not having a dog.
Yeah. And then the other mistake I made was I walked the entire show floor. I went to every booth, I went down every aisle, and just to see what was there and act as a consumer, and just I let people give their whole spiel to me and sell me on stuff and you know, extrovert all over me. And it was exhausting. Yeah, it felt just like that. It was exhausting. I was completely drained. I walked through the whole show floor, and there was stuff I liked, there was stuff I hated. I got to the end and I was just like, all right, now I gotta go talk to people. And so I'm just like standing by the exit thinking like, okay, people are walking out. And they're like walking this way, and I can just maybe approach them. I'm like, no, I can't do that. No, so that's good. Then they want to leave. Why would I bother them? No, maybe I could stand over there. No, okay, I could grab that table, and then like maybe if somebody walked by, I could just like yell at them. No, I don't think so. Maybe I could just leave. I could just leave. Hey, I'm right by the exit. Let's just leave and never come back and say this never happened. And like I was worn out and decided to leave, went back to my car, and just started crying. I was crying for, I was in my car for probably about an hour and a half, during which time I, messaged you about how much trouble I was having. And, you really helped a lot. You helped a lot to bring me back down to earth from where I was floating away to. And I really, really appreciate you suggesting a call, because that didn't even cross my mind. because like we've talked about before, whenever one medium is engaged, then I just stick with that medium until the new medium is switched to. It's like, okay, we're just texting now, so that's all that exists. So yeah, you helped me see that the goal that I had made for myself was not the real, not the most opportune goal for this experience. And
well, as you described it so far, there's a couple of turns out. I do have something to say.
Please do.
As you were describing it earlier, there are two things that struck me. And you were giving a litany of what you thought of your mistakes. And I think the one, you couldn't really have known. You didn't know what the layout of the show was going to be. And I have never predicted successfully what the layout of any event is going to be.
Sure.
I was at one this week and I was like, I had no, you know, concept. I thought it would be this one thing and it was entirely another thing. And often the thing that you think it's going to be is less scary, but not always, as we were discussing. The other thing is, which I think is really hard and I think I definitely suffer from as well, is like walking into the place and thinking that your identity can be something that it fundamentally isn't.
Yeah.
For today, I can be, you know, or I really am. No, I totally am an extrovert. No, I really am. Yeah. And like, or wanting your identity to be something else or needing it to, because that's what the business needs me to be an extrovert. I have to sell. That means extroversion. And and so I think, yeah, like coming in with that sense of your identity being almost at question, you know, rather than like you were trying to match an identity to the event rather than rocking up and go, well, this is the version of Brendan that's here on this Friday afternoon,
right,
or morning, which, you know, which may be a different Brendan in other situations, but this is the Brendan you're getting. So that's just what sort of crossed my mind.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, so you gave me the idea of going back in and talking with the vendor, some of the vendors there that might have a good opportunity for trading business or being a good partner in some way, which kind of similar to our discussion about my apology from either last week or the week before about community and the way that I undervalued community before, because I pushed it all away and then I was living without it, and then now because I have a great one and it seemed to come naturally with no cost, and so I just also still undervalued it and I'm trying to learn to value it more. I've undervalued the connections between businesses, and you know, partially because, I mean, I've done a little bit of trying to do some of that kind of stuff here and there, and I've had plumbers that I've worked with routinely and like sent business their way and we've worked together and it's been great, and you know, a glass guy for showers and stuff and this and that. I don't get a lot of business back. I do share quite a bit of business, but then, you know, I have a trusted person that usually comes through for me. So that part's good, at least.
But that, I think, and I'm using this word not as a way to denigrate your work, but at all. But you are perhaps more of a generalist and you're bringing in a specialist.
Yeah.
And so a specialist is probably less likely to recommend a generalist.
Yeah.
Because they've been brought in as the specialist.
My previous plumber did actually bring me a few, like the situation was is like they're coming in for a whole house repipe, because the customer asked, you know, that was their goal. And then they were like, okay, well, you need somebody to repair the drywall. So here's Brendan.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And so that happened a couple times and that was great. Yeah. So when you told me about that idea, I was like, oh, you know what? There was a restoration company there and they, you know, they do the tear out after some water damage or some mold damage or whatever. And I don't think that they probably do the rebuild. and that's what I would do. I don't want to do the demo anyway. So like, this would be a match made in heaven. There was a couple of those companies there, and there was an electrician there, and there was, a few other, like a foundation working company that they might do some waterproofing for a basement, but they're not going to finish the basement. And so, yeah, so I go back in there, I'm looking around for these companies and strike up some conversations and honestly have a really good time. We make some really good connections. The first group I talked to was one of the restoration companies, and there was four of them there. One person like a sales rep, and one person was the plumber, and one was the electrician, and then another guy might have been a laborer. And yeah, they were all happy to see me. And like, I even talked to them. I was like, hey, cause I think they were like, oh yeah, I think we just saw you a few minutes ago walking by. And I was like, yeah, I left. I got burned out of all the extroverts in here. And I just, I needed to go chill out for a bit because it's just too much energy. And they're like, we get it. It's a lot in here. It is so much. We're all feeling it too. It's kind of crazy. So I totally get it. And I had that conversation with a couple of other vendors, and it was really heartening. It was really like disarming and inviting. We're all sharing this trauma together, and we can get through it together. So that was really great. And yeah, so I got some numbers, I got some names. I got on some people's list. They were excited to take my card because they're like, oh great, we are going to call you. Like some of them were like, yeah, we have a bunch of Washington contractors. We have way too many Washington contractors, but we need some more Oregon contractors. We need to be able to send more work to some people. So, that was really exciting. And yeah. And then I walked away from the whole, event really jazzed, really excited, feeling fulfilled, feeling like this is even better than if I had talked to as many people and potential clients, like, because these could be relationships that go on for years that bring in multiple jobs per connection instead of maybe one job per connection. And if I'm just thinking, purely business, and it was just a good experience. It was a good, I feel like I learned a lot and grew a lot, and it was really hard. And and I want to say thank you again for your support and encouragement and presence.
Guys.
It was very needed and thanked.
Thank you. One hand washes the other, and you're welcome. I think what that was, and I don't want to use the word because it's a bit coachy and wanky, but like, a reframe, like just take the thing and like turn it 90 degrees and it looks a little different. I did my first kind of big-ish trade show last year, and like everybody I spoke to was like, shit, it's loud. Like it is loud. There is a lot going off.
Yeah.
And someone was very rude to me as I walked in and was like, bloody hell. Okay. And it was, there was just so much of it. And they are intimidating. And I think, I'm glad that you were able to have some human communication that could speak to that. Without people trying to do a sales pitch on you or do, be the QVC lady who's like, no, I'm totally comfortable in all these situations. Instead of being like, oh, this is a bit weird and we don't love it. Mm-hmm. I'm really pleased that you were able to sort of find something out of it. And I think my thing when I sent you back in, go back in, soldier. Your work's not done here.
Oh my God.
It was more because I think, I think I laid out the option of you could just bail because you've not paid any money to be in here.
Yeah.
And you were putting a lot of pressure on yourself.
I was. And the reason why is that I had built this up as a way to to get clients. And I had been kind of in this mode of thinking like, I mean, yeah, the website's growing and other things are working and stuff too, but I need to be doing something active. I need to be participating in this client acquisition process. And like that was the story that I had built up in my head, which isn't necessarily untrue, but it was just a lot of pressure when I hadn't had to have been so active before. And now I feel like I do. And I was like, oh, this is my opportunity. And I've spent all week preparing myself for this. I've taken rest days. I've taken all right, this is going to be big. This is going to be hard and I'm going to do it.
Ugh.
And then I get to the thing and I just like, I feel like I chicken out and I'm like, fuck, I wasted the week. I didn't waste just this hour, a couple hours. I wasted my week. And that's where I was feeling. That's why I was so devastated.
Yeah. Oh. And what's so difficult is you thought you were turning up to a rock gig and then suddenly you're being asked to play techno and you're like, I don't have the equipment for this.
Right.
Yeah. This is not what I thought it was going to be. And that's really hard. And you couldn't have predicted that suddenly people were going to, like, it was just going to be something else. You don't know until you're there. And you don't know what are some of the unwritten things that happen at these places. What are some of the things that just happen in, you know, in between a couple of booths or like, you know, I was talking to you about like after parties and like, I know it's not that kind of show, but like,
you know,
places where people are just, you know, if it's more like a convention, you know, people coming in from out of town, they might have a hotel and they might get some people together and and do something. And like, and those things are never on the program.
You got to talk to people.
You got to talk to people.
That's exhausting.
And also, the stinky thing is, a lot of the times it's cliquey and you have to know the people that are going to invite you to the thing. I mean, I think I've talked about it before. So I went to a thing called Django Con in 2013. I've been three times. And the first time, it was every other year. So the first time it was 2013. And it was in
Django Poland. Is a writing language, right?
A coding
language.
So it's not a language. It's something, it is a thing that lets you build websites using a particular language.
So really niche.
Yeah. Well, yes, if you're not in that world.
If you're not in that world, it's like, whoa.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Django is to Python as Rails is to Ruby. There you go.
Niche is to niche.
So that was a Peanuts reference.
Title.
How do we spell? So I went first time doing anything like this on my own. I was like, screw it, I'm a go. It sounds fun. I've got a job. I'll take it out as a holiday. And as you say, vacation. And give it a go. And it was a, you know, few days. And I do the first day and it's kind of nice. And I talk to some people and sort of feel, okay, this is all right. It's going okay. Mm-hmm. I navigate some of the things that are a bit weird. It was food. Like, food is one of the things that always gives me anxiety because often they are buffets and you don't know. I don't know as a visually impaired person what is happening, what is going on, what the rules are and what the food even is. Like, the amount of times I'll pick stuff up and put it on my plate because I can't just stand there and pick up every sign and read it. I've got to just, because there's a moving line and people can be like, no, you should do that. But let's be real. There's a moving line.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I have to just like find a thing that looks brown. That's probably savory. I'll give that a go. Okay, move on. And this one was slightly different. It was much, much easier. And so that was really nice. And then the day ends and then there's, I go back to the hostel because I'm literally staying in a hostel. And I think this is probably on Twitter or somewhere. There's news of, a, I don't know if it was an official gathering, but some sort of a party, a mm-hmm. get together being held at a place. So I jump in a taxi, get to this place, and I have a couple of chats with some people, and I meet a guy, a fellow Brit, and we end up having a nice chat. I think cool, he'll be one to look out for. And I kind of slightly glom onto him a little bit. And then day two, I didn't speak to a single person. I don't even know if I opened my mouth the entire day.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, maybe I did to request what item of food I wanted from the kiosk.
Sure.
Other than that, I don't think I spoke to a single human being.
Do you know why that is?
Because I was too shy. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I still don't know. I'm 42. I still don't know how to talk to people at these things. I still don't know how you go up to a stranger and go, "Hello, I'm a human being."
that's not it. That's not how you do it.
It isn't, is it?
Nope. Yep. But let's try again.
Hello. Do you do Django? Like, it's I don't know.
Okay, getting closer. Maybe less yelling.
Oh, it's so hard.
It is so hard.
It is so hard. Yep. And then so what you sometimes do is you end up trying to break into a conversation, and so there's a few people.
Yeah, everybody's always talking to somebody else.
Going, no, yeah. I think that is also true. And it's like,
wait, who the fuck are you?
Yeah, exactly.
You're listening to our conversation? What the fuck?
This is a private conversation between friends. We all know each other. Have uh-huh. you not got that? We all, of course, because we've been doing this for years and you're new. You're mm-hmm. the interloper. You don't really belong here because mm-hmm. you haven't been part of the club. You don't go to the right subreddits or read the right IRC channels. You're not really part of this, so you shouldn't really be. I mean, we'll tolerate you and you've paid. You've got your ticket. That's fine. But you shouldn't really be here. So if you don't mind, we're going to have a conversation because this is our conference.
Mm-hmm.
It's how it feels.
Yeah, for sure.
So I make a little promise to myself. We talked in last week's episode. Because, we talked about comfort zones. And I was like, the amount of comfort zones out of which I push myself is like, I'm not a person who sits in comfort. I'm not a person who sits and there are areas in which I would, it's like an equalizer. There are, mm-hmm. there are areas where I'm down here, and then there are other areas where I'm up there.
Yeah.
And one of them is like, I won't really let fear take me hostage if I feel that there is something to be gained from an experience.
Yeah.
And so one of the things in this conference as part of the format is they did these lightning talks. And so you put your name down at the beginning of the day and otherwise known as the morning. I like that.
Oh yeah. That. Yeah. 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 There's a, there's a name for that. Yeah.
So you put your name down if there was time for you at the end of the day, you'd get up and you'd deliver a 5-minute talk. 5 minutes was your limit. Once you're done, GTFO. And it was quite well organized. So while one person's speaking, someone's grabbing the next person, getting their laptop mm-hmm. set up, making sure they've done the display preferences to get the things mm-hmm. that the HDMI cable will connect and all that stuff so that, bam, you can kind of just go.
That's cool.
And so I'm there and I'm, and it comes to the end of the day and my name comes up and I go and I do my talk. And it wasn't really about Django. It was sort of about, because I wrote it, it wasn't Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, but if we imagine day one was Monday, I wrote it on the Tuesday evening when I'd got back to my hostel, I'd ordered a Domino's that never arrived or possibly did. And then someone at the front desk just snaffled it for themselves. Also possible. Mm-hmm. And so I went to bed hungry, and because I was too drained and too shy and too awkward to figure out, and I was in an area where like I couldn't just walk down the road and get something, and I wasn't going to go and speak to another person in Polish. Like I was already struggling, and you know,
yeah.
And then you feel like an imperialist at the same time because you expect everyone to speak English for you, and but also it's hard because how do I explain I've got an invisible disability to you so I went to bed hungry and kind of a bit dejected, and I wrote this little presentation, and I think I called it A Deer on Ice, or that was certainly one of the slides, and I was explaining how I felt, and there was a GIF that went doing the rounds back in the day, which was a deer skidding around on ice, and you just see the text underneath. It's just, oh fuck, oh god, oh shit, as its legs are just splaying out everywhere. Yeah. And I sort of explained that's how I was feeling, and like I did a few things that really made people laugh.
Oh, that's great.
And I played a video of my previous cat Misty. It was just something stupid about a little joke about hope or something, and just, yeah, I'm here to make connections. I'm here to speak to people. I find it difficult. That was kind of it, really. And like I talked a little bit about my skills as a developer, but it was really kind of me just saying, I'm here. I exist. I'm part of this. I hope. And I stepped down, and a bunch of people said that was great. You know, mostly people I'd not spoken to. And the guy I'd hung around with on, I think the Monday night, was there. And they were like, we're going to go to the petrol station and get some booze and fags if you want to come. And I was like, yeah, cool. And we, you know, had a 20-minute walk with a bunch of strangers, being loud and boisterous and fun and funny. And, you know, we're all using English as this intermediary language to help us all be understood, which kind of felt lovely. I mean, I know, you know, it's origin, but it's a great thing that there is at least this backup language. and it was one of the best nights of that period of my life. We ended under an underpass doing our own impromptu lightning talks, making fun of the conference. I got bitten by so many mosquitoes. Ooh, it wasn't mosquitoes, but some sort of grass dwelling bug.
Sure.
I got an infection when I came home. but I'd made
worth it.
I'd made friends. And didn't get home till like 5 in the morning. And it was great. And it was terrifying. Terrifying might be overdoing it, but it was really scary in places because I felt incredibly vulnerable physically as a human being because I'm in a strange country. I'm blind. I don't know I'm getting in this car, this taxi that I think is going in the same direction. I think it's going to the same place that these guys are going to, but I don't know. Am I about to get murdered? Two years later, I get asked by the conference. It's every year, it moves around Europe. And in 2015, I got asked on my birthday if I would go and speak at the opening sort of day zero of the conference, because the guy saw my lightning talk.
Amazing.
That was really cool. And I met some nice people. I think one of them might have had the hots for me. She was a lady who lived in Atlanta, and that was fun. And got to go to Cardiff, which was lovely. And then 2 years later, I submitted a talk to the conference in Florence. And I got in and I got to present in this big cinema with a huge cinema display behind me. Huge projection screen. And the proper little Madonna the mic.
The TikTok mic.
I still link to that video, even though it's now 8 years old, because it looks fucking great. Because that's awesome. I'm stood on this giant stage.
Yeah.
And that went well. Like, and that was, I can't remember, I think it might have been day one of the conference. And that was, you know, that was great. And it sort of opened doors and you know, made me realize one of the best ways that you can make friends or make connections at anything like those kinds of events is to present, because it doesn't give you the pretext to talk to anyone, but it gives everyone else a pretext to talk to you.
Yeah.
Because all they've got to do is catch your eye and go, oh, great talk, man. And now you're having a conversation.
Yeah.
Now you're in. And that's all the in you need is for someone to go, great talk, man. And that's one of the reasons will try and give talks at these things. And like, I'm lucky, like I have all the fears that everybody talks about. Like I have all of that stuff and I feel it very, you know, bodily. But I'm lucky in that, and I know this isn't the case for everyone, I come across okay.
Yeah.
I'm blessed with enough, I say bullshittery, but that's not entirely fair. I have enough of a sort of an on stage, not confidence, but maybe a little bit of comfort on, like, not feeling too bad on stage. And I don't really care about all the faces in front of me too much. I care about getting stuff wrong. But less so, you know, as I've got older. I don't know. I kind of wanted to say that just because.
Yeah, man.
These things are really, really scary. And I think context is so important to these events. And that was the difficulty for you, is that the context you went in with didn't allow you to achieve anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
But once you change that context, once you sort of saw you didn't have to, because one of the things as you were describing it is I was thinking, okay, if you had a booth or if you managed to collar someone with a business card, they might take you up on that project and they might take you up fairly quickly because they're like, they have the need, they have the budget, they have the means, and you're like, great, new job. But you might walk around, you might make a couple of contacts and they might not have any work for you for 6 months.
Yeah.
But they will continue
remember me and
to have work.
Yeah, for sure.
And refer you. I think it was a really good, and I'm glad that you made the connection to what you'd seen there and thought, oh, actually, yeah, I could go back in and have a conversation. And I'm glad you did. And I love that you were honest with them and said, yeah, I was having a tricky time because it's fucking scary. It's scary.
Yeah. Yeah, this it is scary. And when you were talking about your your examples of like trying to walk up to people and I was like, is this I'm a human? Is this how we talk now? Or that reminded me of the childhood wound that dictates or is accompanying somebody's Enneagram type for the Enneagram 9, which we both are, the 9 child felt overlooked, like not heard and not included. They may have had like a younger or older sibling that kind of got all the attention they needed, or they had a quiet voice whose opinion got lost in like a sea of loud, other forceful voices. So they learned to go along to get along, finding ways to blend in and avoid getting upset by wanting what others wanted instead of what they wanted themselves. They learned to remain calm when what they wanted was dismissed and they allowed others to decide for them. They became easygoing, a friendly child who would accommodate the needs of the family as a way to feel a sense of belonging and connectedness. And I see that in my own actions, of course. I feel that in my childhood, definitely. But I also kind of sense that kind of possibility for your upbringing as well, based on your stories and how you've talked about stuff. I don't know if that relates for you, if that sounds like it's
fitting. It's something I took through from school, because when I was in primary school, closer to I guess your elementary, I was in a tiny school, 30 kids in the entire school, and they all had some form of visual impairment. And then I moved to a secondary school where, from the age of 11, where there was a, what was called a visually impaired unit. So there was an office with some staff and some teaching assistants within the school, but it was a fully integrated school. And my parents wanted me to go there because they thought I would be too, using the phrase, but like the thought was I would be too mollycoddled by going to a secondary school that catered for blind kids. Whatever's happened has happened, you know, whatever. Yeah. No point trying to judge whether that was a good decision or not. Doesn't help matters. What I do know is I had a rough, terrible time. I had a terrible personality as well, which didn't help. I sucked. The version of me that felt under threat sucked, like real,
of course,
real bad.
Of course, just you created a defense mechanism.
Fucking so defensive. And there's stuff that I'm flat out ashamed of. There's stuff, you know, and so I accept my part, certainly in the at once naivety of trying to make friends with kids who are like, mm-hmm. that's not how you make friends, and yeah. never really quite knowing what the rules were about how you make friends.
Yeah.
So there's that part, but then also just turning into such an unlikable person in the face of that stuff, like, and not being able to deal with it with grace.
Yeah.
And not having anyone around who, like, there was one kid who was the closest to speaking to me on real terms. Mm-hmm. And I never quite, because we used to knock around, and he was a normal ass, just a normal ass kid. No, like mm-hmm. good egg. And this was second or third year. And he moved schools, and so he was sort of my one guy. And I remember saying something to him, and it was obviously something typically self-centered and woe is me. And sure. It was the last thing. It was the last interaction we ever had. He laid into me.
Oh wow!
Like. About being, he was a very smart cookie, I think. Uh-huh. And a very astute person, kind of really laid into me about my, I don't know, like victim mentality, victimhood,
yeah.
all sorts of stuff. I don't remember a lot of it, but I do remember, you know, the color of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I felt deeply wounded and attacked.
Of course.
But of course, you know, he was the one person out of adults and other kids who actually called it.
Right.
I think he called it right.
Yeah.
And it was really upsetting. And then he left like that day or the next day. Now, from his point of view, I think part of it was, I don't think he necessarily wanted to be mean. I also don't necessarily think he felt like he needed to give this kid a dressing down. I think he was under an immense amount of emotional pressure as well, because this was, he was leaving a school that he was unfamiliar with.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a degree to which he was, you know, making an emotional statement, but like what he said was right, from what I remember. As I think of it now, I think he called mm-hmm. it. I never really connected with it because it took me a long, many, many, many years to see my part in it. Like, I didn't start shit, but I didn't deal well with it when it came. Yeah. And so I took all of that. The thing that I learned is you don't make the first move,
right,
with new people.
Yeah.
And I think that might be the first time I've put it in those words.
Yeah.
It's you don't make the, like, and this has been true for me for my entire life. If someone else makes the first move.
Yeah.
Not a problem. Like I was at the bar, last week, and a guy, few of the family got together, and this other couple, had struck up a conversation with my parents, mm-hmm. and they were having their thing, and I was like, don't really know, I don't know what to do here, fit mm-hmm. in, mm-hmm. and I got some drinks at the bar, and one of them sidled up, and he made a crack about the slowness of the service, and I just went and I did like a tight five, you know, and I was being fun and gregarious and all that stuff,
yeah.
But I can't activate that switch,
yep,
you know, the other way, yep. because I learned that when I do act as myself. Mm-hmm. Make the first move, I get laughed at.
Yeah.
And I've never unlearned that. And again, like we talk about comfort zones, you know, I go to these things and I do try and not just stand in the corner and look at my phone. But fuck, it's hard.
It's so hard. You just made me think of something that I hadn't really thought of before. But the... There's the advice of not giving advice unless it's asked for.
Yeah.
And as a coach or as somebody that people are going to be looking for advice from, even then still asking first, would you like my take on that? Would you like some advice on this? Would you like... you know, bringing the question forward of, do you want my bit or are you good? Just want to vent or, you know, whatever. And I just kind of made this connection. I think that you're making too, of like, not just coming out with your tight five, cause you'll get laughed at, but, and you know, the easy way is for them to just approach you and initiate. But maybe there is something, and maybe I could be wrong, but like maybe there's something to the quick hello or the quick, you know, the easy light initiation on our part to make that connection. And if they respond kindly, they respond warmly, whatever, then things can proceed. But not having to come into a situation with something to say, with anything, even just to, you know, probably just a hello is probably what normal people do. Is that what normal people do? I don't know.
This is it. You're asking the difficult questions here because
I should ask more.
Whenever, like, it's all so. For me, as a massive overthinker, it's also mm-hmm. contextual. And there are situations, like, I can probably now, in like a breakfast situation, I could probably find a table with a spare thing and go, do you mind if I sit down? You know, in fact, I've done that plenty of times.
Yeah.
And sometimes you'll spot someone that you know and you can do that way and that's all fine. But, you know, there might be other times where, you know, is it all right if I slide in here and that's okay. So that context is fine.
Yeah.
And we can sort of deal with that. And there's, you know, there's been other, like I was at this thing on Tuesday and someone sort of like I wasn't quite sure whether the people who were sat next to me were part of the thing or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of just sat there awkwardly. I was waiting for it to start or waiting for whatever. And so I was sat there. And I actually felt a little bit bad because I came in with someone else and they'd sat somewhere slightly different. And then I sort of turned around and said hello. But because I was still in social awkward mode, I wasn't ready to be the facilitator, if you like, for the other person to be like, this person's here too.
Right.
And I, you know, and it took them a little bit longer and I sort of felt a little bit bad of like, ah, damn. I mean, they're a big person. They could work out their own shit, but like, you know, it took someone else sort of, I think this gentleman, you know, it was just that, you know, as I was sat there looking at my phone and someone just sort of had, you know, I'd overheard them say, I think this fellow might be, and then that was it, you know, and I turned around and said, oh yeah, hello, chatty chat, 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 chat. And it was lovely. Mm-hmm.
It's hard enough speaking up for ourselves, let alone speaking up for other people.
Yeah. yes, absolutely.
And especially when there's not, like, if you're speaking, like, if I was speaking up for Margaret or for somebody I came to a thing with.
Yes.
Then I, you know, I have this context of, I'm pretty sure I know what their needs are.
Yeah.
But when it's a stranger, I don't know what the stranger's needs are.
No, exactly. No.
Am I my brother's keeper?
Indeed. Am I the keeper of this complete stranger that I've just met? It just made me think I need a t-shirt, or we should make a t-shirt that's something along the lines of, I'm an introvert, don't talk to me unless or until I've had all of the rules of this negotiation laid out purely and simply in front of me. Like, go with the flow. Great, I'll go with the flow. Where is the flow? Where exactly is it happening? At what time? How long will the flow last and where will it be? That's someone else's joke that I'm stealing, but yeah. Like, once I'm on the flow, and you're the same, like, once we get on the flow, the flow's great. And we can, clambering into the flow, like, I'm literally now, and I think, you know, you are a much more svelte person now than perhaps you might have been. Did you ever as the kids say, fuck with water parks.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Love.
So now I'm thinking of me as I was in a water park, an indoor water park last year, in my trunks, nothing else, big old fat dude, sitting in one, like trying to get into one of those rubber rings that's about to go down a water slide. Yeah. Uh-huh. Not a place for dignity. This is not the time for dignity.
There's none to be found.
No, there's squeaking. There's splashing. The fart noises. There's too many legs. Yeah. You're 90 degrees, and then you're suddenly there, and it's like, okay, push me.
You gotta like make body movements to kind of like inch yourself forward. I'm like, it's like, oh, my body weight is pushing the inner tube with too much friction on the ground. Yeah, the water can't
down
lift it up
and backwards.
Yeah, so I have to like
and really don't mind me. I'm just warming the handles, and thank God they've got handles, because otherwise the thing would just shoot out of your ass and go and hit some other poor unsuspecting person in the queue. That experience of getting on a water slide is exactly what it's like trying to start a natural conversation with a stranger.
Completely.
Once
great
the
analogy.
Slides go in, great. Let gravity do the work.
Yeah.
But on that, it's the dirt worst, as my friend used to say.
It's the dirt worst.
And yeah, that's the bit. And I'm like, I'm always trying to, like, how everybody in business, that everybody thinks that there's a secret to marketing and everybody's looking for the marketing secret.
Yeah.
I'm looking for that. I'm looking for, how do I get onto the conversation? How do I mount this conversation that it just happens? And I think other people just do it. Other people just go up and just say a thing.
Yep.
You know, like, oh, business is slow tonight. And we're off, you know.
Yep. Yep.
Someone's got me on and pushed me down and it's we can have fun.
Yeah.
But yeah.
No, I totally.
Man, I hate it.
Yeah, I totally get it. Yeah, some people just somehow they skip that whole process entirely. They just jump into the inner tube and they start flowing down. right away. I don't know how they do it.
I was thinking about a guy from my old improv group this morning, I think, who had difficulty understanding why people couldn't just be assertive and ask for what they wanted. And me and a couple of the other chaps were like, and we didn't really say it, but like the answer was because we don't look like you, because we're not tall and commanding and handsome. We don't feel like we can walk into a room and it's ours.
Yeah.
We don't feel like we can walk into a room and go, I belong here.
Right.
I get to ask for what I want.
Right.
And it was so hard for him. And people like that don't understand. They can be quite abrasive because they're like, well, you just ask for it. And you say, like, it's not that simple. Of course it is. I know the words are simple.
Yeah.
But earlier, as I was saying, hello, I'm a human. Like, that's how it comes out. You know, you think in your head, you're going, my word, doesn't the moon look absolutely exquisite tonight? Wouldn't it be amazing to lose ourselves in gay abandon to that moonlight? I mean, that's exactly what conferences like this are all about, aren't they? It's two people just discovering each other, discovering the world and learning maybe just a little bit about themselves. Would you like to go for a drink? I'd love to go for a drink. That'd be amazing. Mm-hmm. And what comes out is, how are you? Remember time? It's a nightmare. The whole thing's a nightmare.
Somebody posted on the Shrooms subreddit something quippy and fun, and I replied, or they were asking a question, and I replied with like, yeah, brother, you're home. You found it. This is great. It was kind of like an affirming. They were kind of worried a little bit, and I was like, "No, man, you got it."
Yeah.
I'd posted it, and then I looked back at it after I posted it. I was like, "Oh shit!" And so then I edited it and I put edit, and below it I was like, "Sorry, I didn't mean to gender you. I don't know, like, I call people brother all the time, and like." It feels really weird to say sister. And so like person, hello person. And well, that sounds like I'm an alien. So, I'm overthinking this. Have a good day. Bye.
Aww, that's so sweet.
Yeah. And, but yeah, that's just kind of the energy it feels like when you just kind of try to talk to somebody and you don't already have a connection going and don't have a rapport and everything. It's just like, oh, wait, did I do something awkward and weird? Or I don't mean to be offensive. I'm just trying to be me. Is this me? I don't know anymore.
Yeah, that's it. And I think it can lead you to think, and you know, I've had all of the introspective stuff about, you know, am I autistic? Am I this? That? And I certainly, as a kid, you know, I even before I was having a rough time at school, like I really appreciated my solitude. And that's, you know, it was safe and you know, getting some quiet and stuff and you know, perhaps, yeah, there's being overstimulated and stuff, but we can, I think, we have a tendency maybe as a society to someone described this as medicalizing, and my old therapist, who I'm seeing in a couple of weeks, and I'm very, very much looking forward to that.
I have new therapy starting too.
Sorry?
I don't mean to interrupt. I'm sorry, man. But no, I have new therapy starting on Tuesday.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah. My wife suggested that I check out this it's called the William Temple House. They do like free and low cost therapy and like sliding scale kind of thing.
Sweet.
And I was like, because we have insurance right now and it sucks, and it's not going to pay for shit. So I'm like, that sounds good. I need to. I'm in the group therapy stuff and whatever, but I should probably get back into some one on one stuff. And so I sign up. I go there, and they ask me like, you know, what are you looking for? And I'm like, I'm more or less like, surprise me. I was like, I've done talk therapy. I've done EMDR. I'm interested in brain spotting. I've done this and that. Like I'm open, like how just, I want something new. I kind of don't want just talk therapy because I've done it and I feel, I not that I've gotten everything I can out of it, but I've gotten a lot out of it and I feel like there's other areas. And I got delightfully surprised by my new practitioner, who is an art therapist. And
oh, so sweet.
I just know that I have something new in store for me. I don't know what that's going to involve. I don't know if I'm going to make music or if I'm going to make drawings or paintings or you know, what medium, how it's going to work, any of it. I'm just like, sweet, sign me up. Like that.
That's exciting.
Let's explore it. So
yeah, that's yeah. really cool.
Yeah, man.
I never told you, but I was at earlier in the year, I think this was, I was at a friend's birthday party, and one of the guys there, really lovely guy, he's a therapist, and he's studying EMDR.
Oh, cool.
And he was very excited that I knew what it was and that I might be a case study. And I'm like, I don't think I'm going, because we know each other and you know, I don't think I want that.
Yeah,
because we have a friend in common and she's extremely brilliant and is very someone I could talk to a lot about therapy and have talked a lot to about therapy.
Yeah.
But also like, and I know he wouldn't talk to my friend, like to our mutual friend. I know that.
Yeah.
But I just, I think it's actually, it's not even the mutual friend. It's the, like, I don't want to be therapized by someone I am going to encounter in social settings. Yeah. But I think I have this little pet theory anyway that my old therapist would, you know, he was talking about a tendency to pathologize things. Mm-hmm. And I think anxiety is one of those things. At the moment, the fashion is ADHD. And I say the fashion because I think anybody who thinks that they might have it should go and get themselves diagnosed or seek diagnosis or at least seek the support that's out there. But don't treat TikTok descriptions of ADHD as, because I look a lot of that stuff and I think, I think you think that's what ADHD is.
Right.
I think you've watched another TikTok that's described what ADHD is. And I think you're conflating it with something else. And I don't think that particular thing is very helpful. But anxiety.
You're not the only
the
person
thing.
That thinks that either. I've heard that from unrelated contexts that, that TikTok does not understand what ADHD is.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I saw a great little video this morning, actually, from a guy who's just made a documentary, because there's, you know, part of the talk at the moment is everybody's getting diagnosed and everybody's got ADHD these days. Nowadays, it seems like everybody's got ADHD. Okay. Mm-hmm. And his point, which was really interesting, because like, yes, that does seem to be the case. Mm-hmm. But his point was like, yeah, but how many people wear glasses? Like, you don't look at people wearing glasses, you know, and think, oh, everybody's trying to suddenly correct their vision all the time. It's like, it's a spectrum.
Uh-huh.
And we get glasses to correct a little bit so that we can have a level playing field. Makes a lot of sense to me. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was a very good framing of it. But I think there is this tendency to pathologize anxiety and to say, I have anxiety, therefore, rather than I am anxious about this particular situation.
Right.
I am anxious about speaking to, and I think the more and more we can get specific, rather than I have anxiety about speaking to people, which we have as this, and I think, you know, I feel like I know people in my life who are like this. That is in itself a comfort zone, because whilst you're in that, nobody's going to challenge you. The hope is no one's going to challenge you. The hope is everybody's going to leave you the fuck alone and go, and you'll never have to move out of that, and you know, whatever. And you can sit in atrophy in that. And of course, you know, anyone who does have anxiety, that's a different issue, like actual anxiety. But I think people, there may be specific experiences that have made them anxious. And this is coming from a fucking idiot. Like, I don't know. I'm not a psychologist, but this is my reckon for today. that we have, and the internet, you know, very much propagates or pollinates this idea, because it's very memeable. My anxiety. Oh, don't speak to me before I've had my anxiety meds. You know, like all the stuff. Oh, it's Monday anxiety. Like whatever. Like all the cute little tea towels and the stuff that's you know.
The mugs.
And that's all fine, and we can have a joke about it, but it doesn't like help.
No.
And what is much more helpful is to say, okay, what specifically makes you anxious? What is the situation? When's the last time it happened? Rather than...
Yeah, or what's the underlying trauma that causes this?
Yeah, it's so... You know, I can talk very specifically about things that make me anxious, which is different from saying I have social anxiety. Like, yeah, I mean, maybe you don't, or maybe that's not a thing, or maybe... This stuff's really difficult because you learned earlier that you don't know the rules, or the last time you tried this, you fell flat on your ass or whatever. And it's like, maybe you don't have anxiety. Maybe you had a shitty first experience.
Right.
And actually, like we've both discussed, it's getting on the water slide. We're back to water parks, but that's a different thing. Roller coasters. getting on the water slide is tricky, but like once we're on there, that's fine. That to me doesn't necessarily speak of someone who has social anxiety. That speaks to me someone who specifically is anxious about not knowing how to strike up a conversation, which feels very common.
Once
you can break it down and go, that's normal, like it's normal to not know how to start a conversation. You've built it up and you've created this identity, and then it's made it bigger in your own mind. And so, sorry, go on.
No, you're fine. Yeah. I was just thinking, I was putting myself in the situation, like in the trade show that I went to, I was actively trying to get myself to initiate, and that spiraled me into anxiety and to a small panic attack. Panic attack's a strong word, but I exhausted myself, and I had to recuperate. In any given circumstance, like if I go to some sort of gathering, like I go to church or whatever, I go to any social situation, the idea of walking up and talking to somebody isn't an idea. It just isn't present. I'm not getting anxious about it because I'm not thinking about it, because it's just not there. It's people walk up to me and great, you initiated, we can talk. Awesome. There's just no initiation inclination present. last time I was at church, a friend who I met at a different party, who I hadn't seen there before, but I remember hearing that he did go there, but he was walking up the aisle after taking communion. And, I threw my fist out and we fist bumped and it was great. And then later we saw each other again and chatted, and we're going to go out for barbecue soon. But like that's as much initiation as I got. It's like just throwing a fist out and you're like, hey man, good to see you. I see you. It wasn't the time for a conversation. The band was playing and people were just quietly getting to their spots and praying and everything like that. And that's kind of the cool thing about the structure of something like that, is that there's times when you can talk and there's times when you can't talk. And like there's a moment where the pastor you have a pastor is like saying like, okay, hey, look around and meet your neighbor, and we're gonna get the stage ready or whatever, and then there's like at the end of it you can all right, go home or talk to somebody. Whatever. When the show's going, you're not talking to people, and that's the comfort zone. It's like, okay, I don't have to be aware of other people. I don't have to be like trying to engage. I can just enjoy the presentation. I was just thinking about that. I'm not like actively seeking talking to other people, because that part is just turned off. There's nothing there. There's no like scanning the room, like, ooh, who can I talk to? There's no like, I see a person, I'm going to go up to them and say this thing. And then like, I get all anxious about that. Like that doesn't really happen, because I'm not thinking about that. I did actually go up and talk to the pastor after the last sermon he did, which because I felt really moved by it, and it was really interesting. And so I was like, just gonna go up and tell him like, hey man, that was really impactful and it was really interesting, thanks for sharing that. And then we ended up talking for a couple minutes, and he was asking me about like, oh, are you new, like what's going on and this and that. And it was really interesting interaction, really nice guy. And yeah, so I guess I did initiate in that regard, but it feels easy when you're giving. Yeah, there's like he gave a presentation. There is a, yeah, like you were saying before, like there's a context for it. There's a understanding.
An if this, then you know, there is a flow chart.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't just.
And that's it. It's like, what do you say to a stranger? Mm-hmm. And you know, part of this is me like overthinking some of this, because like, not overthinking it. Part of me is the particular difficulty I have is that I can't scan a room and notice things.
Sure.
So I can't spot a lanyard from a particular company.
Right.
And go, oh, you're from Acast, or you're from, oh, I love the work that you do. Or, oh my God, your podcast is this, you know, cause I'm someone who conversant in the, you know, for example, if it were a podcast industry thing, like as someone who knows the industry, like I might go up to a company and go, oh, like I know what, you know, what do you do within that company? Or even, you know, hello Jeff, cause I can see your name. Like all of that stuff for me is not available to me. I don't know if that would change things that much.
Well, maybe I don't have that excuse.
But it's I mean, it's a bit unfair to call it an excuse.
I'm sorry. I did not mean to dismiss. It's not an excuse for you. I'm just saying, like, I have this problem too. And I don't get it. I can't just blame my, like, not again. I can't, just is not the right word, but
but you know,
I can see their name tag and I can see where they're from, and I'm like still not able to go and talk to them.
But if we were to pick a company, would there be something that you would be interested in what that company did, for example?
Probably.
Yeah. I think that's the pretext then, is to go, I love it. And even if they say, well, that's not really my department, I'd do something, that's fine. You're still in a conversation at that point. Yeah. You know, to be able to go, like, in, oh, and
okay,
say,
okay, what do you do?
Like to start with that is hard. But yeah, like, oh, okay, so you're not in, you know, you haven't handled this particular roofing tile. You know, you're the marketing department for it. But okay, cool.
Exactly.
I think it's finding, I mean, actually another thing, if I think about, this comes from Dimension 20. So there's this Ali Beardsley character who has like a minus something in charisma. and he keeps making these faux pas, and one of the characters played by, get in the comments, Brendan Lee Mulligan, says, because Ali's character keeps like losing roles on action. This is the most fucking apposite thing that has ever come out of one of our conversations, I think. His character keeps rolling, you know, these awful roles and just fucking up these conversations. And there's one of these main characters that Ali, you know, wants to try and ingratiate. And I think Ali's character asks for advice from this character. And I think the character says something along the lines of, pick something on that person that is not their physical appearance, pick something that you can see or something that they've done. Mm-hmm. And if it is something that can see, not about their face, not about, you know, something genetic, but about a piece of clothing or an accessory maybe the way they've done their hair, and just say, that's nice. I like that.
Yeah.
It's so goddamn simple, but what if you just went up to someone and said, I love those glasses, or I love that microphone logo that you've got on your brooch, or whatever, you know, like that's an interesting tote bag. That's a fun, like anything like that is, yeah. is the way in. I think
that's, that was the first thing I said to my, first wife was, I like your shoes. Cause hey. I had heard that advice and it worked.
Yeah.
Well, I don't okay. know.
it's almost as if the oldest advice is the bestest advice.
Yeah.
And I'm going to remember that and try and take that with me, and try and notice things. I mean, I could probably say I like your shoes, and I can probably bank that 99.9% of the time they are wearing shoes. So it's probably going to be fine.
Yeah.
the one person out of 1,000 who says, I'm not wearing shoes, I just run in the other direction.
Or I'm thinking, like, you know, a couple weeks down the line, you're like, you really hit it off in the friendship, and like, and the topic comes up that you can't see that great, and they're like, oh, how far could you see? And you're like, you know, like a foot or two, and like, so you couldn't have seen my shoes? You didn't know?
The whole conversation is based on a lie?
Exactly.
Mark, I'm scandalized.
And as always, don't forget to shake your balsamic vinegar before using it, and correct me if I'm wrong.
Shoes?
Speaking of my ex-wife, we might now have my ex-in-laws yes. as Convergence listeners.
Ah! Oh, God.
I don't
I've
think,
got so much editing to do.
I don't think so.